You're tuned to WFHB.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported,
community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community and supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM, reporting live for WFHB. This is Carolyn Vanderweel.
And I'm Ron Bronson. This is the Daily Local News for Thursday, May 24th, 2018.
And then longer-term exposure, invariably, you're talking about cancer. These are definitely highly likely to be carcinogens, highly probable carcinogens.
Widespread contamination by dry cleaning chemicals that have leached into the groundwater aquifer in Spencer have led to declaration of a Superfund site. Dr. Diane S. Henschel is an expert in risk assessment and sublethal health effectives of environmental pollutants. Dr. Henschel's research focuses on the effects of pollutants on wildlife and human health. We'll hear her analysis of the groundwater contamination later in the program in today's feature report.
Memorial Day is coming up on Monday. This afternoon, our weekly public opinion feature, Voices in the Street, asks what your plans are for the holiday. That's coming up later in the program, but first, your daily headlines.
Typically, Memorial Day weekend is one of the busiest travel days of the year. This year, Southern Indiana residents might be better off staying at home. The Indiana Department of Transportation announced today it's planning to limit northbound and southbound traffic between Bloomington and Martinsville down to one lane in either direction. The lane closures along I-69's Section 5 construction zone will be in place for the entire weekend. The announcement comes after the City of Bloomington announced they'll deploy police officers at the 3rd Street overpass to help direct traffic. Yesterday, Public Works Director Adam Wason says there isn't much the city can do to alleviate the 40-minute traffic times many commuters are seeing along the overpasses. Wason did say the city is expecting to reopen Tap Road when bridge work is completed next week. Additionally, the 102nd Indianapolis 500 this Sunday is expected to draw record crowds of race fans. Last year's race drew approximately 300,000 spectators from around the country, according to the Indianapolis Memorial Speedway. In addition to construction delays and high holiday traffic, fuel prices are at a four-year high, according to the American Automobile Association. Gas prices are expected to jump more than $3 a gallon in Indiana. That's the highest since 2014.
The Indiana Department of Environmental Management is recommending that children, the elderly, and people who may have trouble breathing to stay indoors this weekend. IDEM issued the recommendation in anticipation of the increase of stop traffic this weekend, as well as high temperatures and clear skies. The department has issued an ozone level warning across the state. IDEM declared today and tomorrow air quality action days. Action days are issued when the air quality drops dramatically enough that it is unsafe, or maybe unsafe, for young children, the elderly, those who have asthma, and those who suffer from heart conditions to be outside. Ozone levels rise dramatically, in part due to the temperature. Ground-level ozone is created when high temperatures meet vehicle exhaust, emissions, and gasoline vapors. The resulting ozone is a lung irritant that can cause coughing and respiratory issues. IDEM also warns that residents in Monroe County should expect increased ozone levels and to be aware of potentially dangerous air quality.
The Indiana Center for Recovery, a for-profit addiction treatment center that opened in Bloomington last June, failed a state fire inspection today. The City of Bloomington confirmed that City Fire Inspector Tim Clapp accompanied the state fire marshal during an inspection of the Indiana Center for Recovery's building near the IU Health Bloomington Hospital in downtown Bloomington. City of Bloomington Communications Director Yelka Sanders says the failed state fire inspection is due to the former apartment complex the Indiana Center for Recovery moved into.
The building was previously used as apartments. I had an R2 occupancy permit, but they determined that it was being used as an I1, which is institutional one occupancy style. And it doesn't comply with the state's fire standards for an I-1 occupancy.
The Indiana Center for Recovery paid $1.6 million for the 24-unit apartment on First Street in March of last year, according to an investigative piece published by Laura Land and Abby Tonzing in the Herald Times. That piece found that the Indiana Center for Recovery repeatedly petitioned the Bloomington Board of Zoning Appeals to allow for variances in the former apartment complex. The company also paid nearly $500,000 for the former Hoosier Energy headquarters and 3.5 acres on East Ellis Road, north of Bloomington, for an inpatient detox center. The company also reportedly plans to operate a drug testing laboratory at the Ellis Road site to screen patients' urine and blood for drugs. The Indiana Center for Recovery has 30 days to bring their former apartment complex into compliance. The state fire inspection cited the center for violating the state fire code, which states, quote, "No change in the character or use of any building or structure shall be permitted that shall cause the building or structure to be classified within a different occupancy group or within a different division of the same occupancy group," end quote. The Indiana Center for Recovery declined comment for the story.
Residents on streets in or near Bloomington school zones may see reduced speed limits and flashing beacons by the year 2020. Neil Copper is a project engineer with the City of Bloomington Planning and Transportation Department. Speaking in last night's Bloomington City Council meeting, Copper said safety is the primary driver of the proposed code changes.
If a pedestrian is hit by a motor vehicle that's traveling at 20 miles per hour, 9 out of 10 times that pedestrian will survive, 1 out of 10 times the pedestrian won't survive. But if a pedestrian is hit by a motor vehicle at 40 miles per hour, only 1 out of 10 pedestrians will survive that crash. It's also worth noting that the pedestrians least likely to survive are the young and the elderly.
Under the proposed code changes, speed limits on select streets within school zones will be reduced to 20 miles per hour. Peden says the change could serve to encourage parents to let their kids bike or walk to school.
If parents are uncomfortable having their children walk to school because there is a high volume and speed of motor vehicles, then those parents might start driving their children to school instead of letting them walk, which then other parents see, again, even higher volumes of motor vehicle traffic. If you've been around an elementary school in the morning, you know how chaotic it can be. Improving our school zones is one way to kind of try to shift that balance back so that more people are comfortable having their children walk or bike to school.
The length of a reduced speed zone will also be reevaluated. Peden says long, low-speed zones mean lower compliance. He referenced Templeton Elementary's low speed zone on Henderson, which is more than a mile long.
So people driving motor vehicles are much more likely to follow these laws when there's an apparent reason for the school zone and the reduced speed limit is only required for a short distance. Typically a school speed zone can be as short as 200 feet on either side of a crosswalk. So you have enough time when you pass the beacon, if you realize you're traveling too fast, that you can slow down before you reach the crosswalk, but it's not so long that you forget that you've passed the beacon or wonder why you're going that slow or accidentally your speeds drift up again.
The city is also proposing residential streets near schools that don't have sidewalks should have permanent 20-mile-per-hour speed limits. Peden pointed to the neighborhood adjacent to Templeton Elementary School.
So an example of a street altered for consistency is Palmer Avenue, which runs north-south just west of Henderson. It has sidewalks on part of it, but not all of it. And so we recommended just making all that section within the school walk zone 20 miles per hour. I also want to note, we could question, why doesn't Palmer extend further north with its speed limit changes? Or why isn't Dixie, which is a few blocks north, to included? And the answer is that basically we are trying to focus our current efforts on these school walk zones.
Select streets near Arlington Elementary and Bloomington High School North could also be reduced to 20 miles per hour. Planning staff would also like to see more flashing beacons in school zones. The beacons would flash for short periods in the mornings and afternoons when kids are most likely to be traveling to and from school. Councilmember Isabel Piedmont-Smith asked Peden for clarification, saying drivers ignore some beacons, but not others.
What kind of beacons are these going to be? Are they like the ones that are already being used near Childs and Rogers, or are they more like the ones when you try to cross South Walnut on Allen Street and everybody ignores them?
They would be similar to what you see on High Street I think there's some near Childs, and there's also some near Rogers and Binford. There are a couple schools that have the flashing beacons. They would not look like the beacons at Allen and Walnut or Forth and Rogers, where you push a button and then they flash in order to allow you to cross.
Peden added the beacons will likely be solar-powered. Council members Chris Sturbaum and Isabel Piedmont-Smith remarked that kids can't always be counted on to cross in designated crossing areas. They proposed staff consider installing flashing beacons at high-volume intersection of Henderson and Rogers Streets near Templeton Elementary. Referring to a map of proposed speed limit changes, Sturbaum said staff had focused on areas that are already calm.
I think if you look at the map that's up there now, the streets on the right-hand side on Stull and Park, you're pretty much calming dead-end streets. And then they do get to Davis, but that's a pretty dead area that doesn't have much traffic in it. And then the Dunn Street addition, which is all to the left of the school, is all calm. There's not speeding in that. The streets are designed to calm. And this Thornton Drive, those are dead ends too. So you're sort of addressing all these areas where it's already slow traffic and then not addressing the most dangerous streets in the school that is closest. I don't think there's another school in the city that's as close to these high-speed streets as Templeton. So generalizations and concepts are one thing, but site-specific common sense is another. And I think I always think it's dangerous around that school.
Construction for the proposed project is slated for 2020 and will be paid for with funding already secured from the Federal Highway Safety Improvement Program. Council members conditionally approved the proposed code changes in a straw poll. A formal vote will be taken at a later meeting. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Carolyn Vandeweel.
And I'm Ron Bronson. Support for WFHB comes from attorneys Eric Slotograff and Ben Neoff. Slotograff Neoff is located at 200 East 3rd Street in downtown Bloomington, assisting families and small businesses in meeting the legal challenges of life, providing estate planning and wills, as well as family law services. More information is available at 812-332-6000 or online at slotografflegal.com. Slotograff Neoff, law for community, business, and life.
Last week, the Environmental Protection Agency added downtown Spencer to the Superfund National Priorities List. Dr. Diane Henschel at IU's School of Public and Environmental Affairs is an environmental toxicology expert. In today's feature report, Dr. Henschel speaks with WFHB News Director Wes Martin about what the chemical contaminant tetrachloroethene, or PCE, can do to the human body.
Can you tell us what exactly PCE is and what effect that could have on groundwater or the human body?
Perchloroethylene is tetrachloroethylene, is one of a group of chlorinated small solvents. It's got, very simply, two carbons that are attached by a double bond, and each carbon's attached to two chlorines. Because of the nature of it, it makes it also partially water-soluble, which is going to affect how it moves in groundwater. So what perchloroethylene does to our bodies, it affects an awful lot of our body. Most of the time, because it's so small, it's very volatile. So a lot of our exposure is through the air. So, for example, it's used in dry cleaning frequently. And so people who work at dry cleaning establishments where they're exposed to higher levels of it tend to breathe it in rather than through other methods. In this case, in Spencer, we're dealing with perchloroethylene having hit our groundwater and having hit, therefore, our drinking water. So in that case, most of the people in Spencer who are going to be exposed will have been exposed to drinking water, which is not unusual for a Superfund site situation. There are, by the way, concentrations in the soil in like one area, according to the data, that looks like it might be high enough that you might be able to smell it in the summer, would be my guess, from looking at the concentrations that are in the testing document. So what does it do? So it does depend, and the data that we have comes from both air and drinking water exposure, so please realize that. And there's two kinds of exposure. There's the short-term exposure, and then there's the longer-term exposure, and they're going to have different effects. So, for example, a more typical short-term exposure is going to be related to the nervous system. So some people get headaches or queasy from it. You can get disorientation or dizziness from it. You could be irritable from it. If you have a longer term but not very long term exposure, especially through the air, you couldn't, or even potentially in drinking water, but most often through the air for this, could be seeing memory deficits or concentration problems. It could be affecting your sleep. It could affect your ability to walk a little bit. It can give you what's called ataxia, so your movements aren't quite as smooth. You could have delayed reaction times. And for longer-term exposure, you could end up with some peripheral neuropathy. Your nerves could actually start being damaged, directly damaged by it. For longer-term exposure, we're talking about effects on a whole variety of different organs. So liver, because liver does the processing of it, kidney, which is where a lot of it is removed. It affects the cardiovascular system and causes like heart arrhythmia. That could be a short-term or a longer-term effect. It can cause pulmonary edema. That's at least not very short-term. And it can have reproductive effects as well as causing cancer. So for liver, we're talking about effects like hepatitis or cirrhosis, cell death in the liver, or fatty liver. And that's going to be made worse by people who, when people drink at the same time. So anytime you're drinking alcohol and you're exposed to the PCE in your drinking water, the effects could be worse on your liver. Probably also true, the effects could be worse on your kidney. So kidney, it tends to suggest, the data suggests that there's tubule damage, and there's damage in the filtration system in your kidney. So you end up with protein in your urine, enzymes in your urine, and sometimes with really bad high-dose effects could be blood in your urine. Reproductive, they've got data on reproductive effects from situations where there's been chronic higher dose exposure through drinking water, like Camp Lejeune and a place in New Jersey. And in those cases, they tend to see small for gestational age babies, increased jaundice in babies, and an increase in just cleft defects on the data. So I think that's cleft palate. And it is important to realize that when you drink it, or even when you breathe it, it can end up in the milk. So the babies are getting it not just through the air, through mixing up contaminated water with the milk, you know, the fake milk that they use, but you can also get it through your drinking water. And then longer term exposure, invariably you're talking about cancer. These are definitely highly likely to be carcinogens, highly probable carcinogens. In other words, there's a lot of data that says that they're associated with increased risks of cancer. And the cancers can include leukemia, but also breast, lung, non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. And for the chronic high-dose settings, like dry cleaners, they've seen increased risk of cancers like esophagus, esophageal cancer, skin cancer, cervical cancer, uterine cancer, liver cancer, and kidney cancer and bladder cancer. So in other words, pretty much across the spectrum, you're talking about an agent that gets into your body and can cause damage to your cells.
Dr. Henschel, does this have to be in a particularly high dosage in the groundwater, or is there a threshold for how much of this PCE needs to be in the groundwater before we start seeing these kinds of health effects and symptoms?
That's a really interesting question. So if you're just talking groundwater, the maximum contaminant level that's allowed is 5 parts per billion, which is 5 micrograms per liter. And there are some places where they've got indications of concentrations that high. So if you look at the map, most of it's lower than that in the tested areas. But they have one place where PCE is as high as 180 micrograms per liter. So I think that's what they're concerned about. And in another spot, it's 220 micrograms per liter. So I think what they're concerned about at this point is how bad could it get? And by the way, the wells include one that's above the 5 micrograms per liter. There's one at 14. micrograms per liter. That's the drinking water wells. That I think that's one of the ones that was taken offline and is only used rarely now, according to the Spencer response to the EPA.
So it's possible that this has been consumed by residents for a significant period of time, at least at that, at twice the recommended threshold.
I know how Spencer mixes their drinking water. So in the testing that is online, they have one well at 1.3 micrograms per liter. They have one well at 14 micrograms per liter. And they have one well at 0.71 micrograms per liter. The first time that there was indications that there was definitely problems in Spencer is, what, 7 years ago or thereabouts. Apparently in 2017, Spencer took two of these contaminated wells offline, and according to their language, they use it only rarely now, only when they need additional water. They put in a fourth well, and they apparently mix the two wells, the slightly contaminated well and the uncontaminated water, and then they also said, quote-unquote, that they're treating the water. But in what I have seen so far, I haven't seen how they're treating it, so I don't quite know. I would hope it's carbon filtration, but I don't know. But if they are treating the water to eliminate the PCE, then as of sometime last year, I would say drinking water is probably clean. But before then, I would say the drinking water was likely to be contaminated. At what concentration depends on how they mix their water.
And that was Dr. Diane Henschel from IU's School of Public and Environmental Affairs Department. Dr. Henschel was speaking with WFHB News Director Wes Martin about the groundwater contamination in Spencer with the dry cleaning chemical PCE.
Support for WFHB comes from MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
Up next, our weekly public opinion segment, Voices in the Street.
Welcome to Voices in the Street, WFHB's weekly public opinion feature. Voices in the Street provides an opportunity for people in our community to share their opinions and perspectives on the issues and events that matter most to Bloomington residents.
With Memorial Day around the corner, Voices in the Streets asks your friends and neighbors if you have any plans for the upcoming weekend and how you'll be spending the holiday.
I'm going to be taking a nap.
I don't think we do.
No plans.
No. Nope. We're boring.
Yeah.
Is that this weekend?
It is this weekend.
Man, awesome.
I'm moving, so I'm going to be packing up my apartment and walking my dog.
No, I have no plans. I'm going to be working all weekend.
Yeah, I'm here for the Early Music Festival. Yeah, really enjoying my time here.
Literally, I'm just working all weekend and I'm probably going to sleep.
Yeah, we're going to hang at the farm up here. Have you been there?
Yeah,
it's just farm, no article.
No the farm, just farm.
I'm going out on a pontoon with my family.
Collapsing.
No, I have an online test I have to complete, so I'll be doing that at home by myself.
Yeah, I'm going back to Chicago visiting my family, my dog.
Farm to Harstel's.
Camp out between the farm, not the farm.
Oh my goodness.
There's a farm in Missouri that
we'll have a break.
We have family tradition, decorating graves. We got a lot of veterans in our family. That's the first thing. And then usually there's a cookout at somebody's house. It's just spending time with family, maybe some adult beverages.
No plans.
Not yet.
Stay at home.
Yep.
Cook something on the grill maybe.
Relax.
I have to go to a cookout because it's somebody's birthday, so.
I am working.
Just relaxing, yeah.
I don't have any plans because I'm Canadian.
I'll be driving to Connecticut to do a live action role play regional event.
Going home to Chicago.
I'm gonna go to the lake and just hang out on the boat for most of the time.
Moving furniture. Depends on the weather. Playing golf.
I'm going to my boyfriend's little brother's birthday party.
I live in Southern California. I'm flying home tomorrow. Yes. Gonna hang out at the beach.
No, I actually live out of town, so I don't know. We're gonna maybe go to the lake out there or something. So
we just hang out on Homer from Indianapolis. Okay. So it gets really busy with traffic because the 500. So our relatives just come over and we hang out at the house.
Avoid the 500.
Probably like go somewhere else, like just to travel for like really short period, because I saw like the flight tickets are so cheap, like for the Memorial Day.
Actually, yeah, we have family from Wisconsin coming and my roommate from Chicago, and we're going to the Indy 5 for the first time.
My plans are just to have a 3-day weekend and relax.
Short answer, no. Not really.
My family usually has a cookout, so maybe that.
Well, I will be studying for the MCAT. I'm taking that in a week, and then it's his birthday. So we're doing a cookout.
Happy birthday.
Birthday yep. Party.
I'm driving to Atlanta to work there for the summer.
I'm just going to relax and enjoy myself.
I'm working at the hospital saving lives. No yeah. Beach.
I have to spend time with my kids. They don't have school.
I am going to see some friends and have a beer.
I'm working.
Same.
Working too, actually.
Okay. Well, our friend group is having a little cookout. That's going to just be us. No family members involved, just friends. No odd political opinions that I have to dispute. Just friends and food.
The important stuff is paying respects to the veterans.
This has been Voices in the Street, WFHB's weekly public opinion segment, featuring candid commentary from your friends and neighbors on the issues and events that matter most to Bloomington residents. Voices in the Street is a volunteer-powered production of our News and Public Affairs Department here on WFHB 91.3 and 98.1 FM, community radio for South Central Indiana.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Jonna Chester and Wes Martin, along with Sarah Vaughn for Cats Week, a partnership with Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Wes Martin.
Voices in the Street was produced by Jenna Janikowski. Engineer today is Dan Withard. Our theme music is provided by Ben Lumsdane, Scott Smadke, and Danny Graff. Executive producer is Wes Martin. For WFHB, this is Ron Bronson.
And I'm Carolyn Vandeweel. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered independent daily news program.
Stay tuned for Big Talk with Michael Glab, a WFHB News and Public Affairs program highlighting the issues, events, and people in South Central Indiana. That's coming up next on WFHB.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB Bloomington Community Radio. Our news is written and reported by volunteers working to provide local news, cover local issues, and strengthen our local community. We invite you to participate. You may submit questions, comments, and story ideas to news@wfhb.org. You can become a daily local news volunteer by attending new volunteer orientation. You can find an archive of past shows and individual news reports online at wfhb.org and catch live broadcasts of the Daily Local News Monday through Thursday at 5 p.m. We are local, longer.